Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 3rd, 2021. Section A. YWLA's future split between options. Board to consider spending $3.7 million on portables or taking over STEM building. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD board and the community heard the options regarding the Young Women's Leadership Academy on Wednesday. The options will be spend another $3.7 million on customized portable buildings and the infrastructure associated with them for the campus located in Southwest Midland, or move YWLA across town into the current Washington STEM Academy building. That would put an end to the Washington STEM Choice School option after nearly two decades. The presentations of options was part of a board community meeting at the YWLA campus located in the 100 block of Thornbridge. The meeting included hours of community feedback, including considerable pushback from residents wanting to keep Washington STEM Academy in place. There will be another meeting at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday at the Washington STEM campus. An item regarding the YWLA option is expected to come before the board during its regularly scheduled December meeting on December 13th. MISD staff said the board needs to make a decision by January at the latest. The Partnership School is a venture that allows an all-girls setting for students in grades 6 through 9. Next year, the 10th grade will be added, and the school will grow until it serves grades 6 through 12. It is considered a school of choice, according to the district, and it is run by the Dallas-based Young Women's Preparatory Network. The potential expansion for portables for the YWLA campus would complete the third build-out of four required if a permanent home is not found. The total cost of the custom portable campus could top $12 million. Currently, YWLA shares land with Jones Elementary. According to Midland ISD's contract with the Young Women's Preparatory Network, MISD shall provide facilities in the form of classrooms, office furniture, equipment, and storage areas for the school at no cost. Midland ISD offered the following about the school during the meeting Wednesday. Its employees are Midland ISD employees, and its students are considered MISD students. The expectations are YWLA could grow to serve around 100 students in each grade or up to 700 students in the school. There are qualifications for students seeking admission for YWLA, including a minimum semester average of 80 in math and in reading, that they have standard on reading and math star, and a thorough application process that includes an essay. The Midland ISD website reports that round one applications for choice schools and transfer requests for fall 2022 will be open December 7th and will close on January 28th, 2022. The hope for YWLA in 2019 was that voters would approve a bond referendum that would have allowed YWLA to eventually move into an open facility created by the move of an MISD junior high. The referendum failed. A discussion took place in March and had the support of at least two MISD board members to move YWLA into the Jones campus building, moving students that attended Jones to a neighboring campus. Midland ISD officials opted to wait, see the results of a demographic study, and bring options vetted by the district's facilities committee that includes three board members to the board Wednesday. When factors like enrollment, capacity, building footprint, campus size, and classroom sizes were considered, three campuses were identified as options: Carver Center, Jones, and Washington Stem. MISD staff Wednesday night said Carver Center did not have the number of classrooms that were 700 square feet or larger, a TEA standard for high school classrooms. Carver Center had a 13 square foot classrooms compared to the 28 at Jones and 26 at Washington Stem. The footprint of the campus also was a concern. The campus is 6.4 acres, which would be an issue because of the parking needed for YWLA staff and future students. Jones Elementary was ruled out because it was a neighborhood school and because the district forecasted that its available capacity would be needed to help the district with growth in West Midland. Other campuses considered were Rusk, Santa Rita, and South. In all three cases, there were issues with total acreage and because they were neighborhood schools. Santa Rita and South also showed capacities higher than 75%. Washington's capacity was listed as below 50%. The Washington STEM Academy is located in the 1800 block of East Wall Street, just east of Fairgrounds Road. It has a 71,515-square-foot building on 13 total acres. There are 6 science labs of 1,000-square-foot, and the capacity is the lowest in the district. In 2019, Washington STEM was one of 9 Midland ISD campuses that the TEA considered failing. What about students at Washington STEM? Midland ISD officials said Wednesday's enrollment at Washington STEM was 338, but should YWLA be relocated, that 300 students would need to be relocated from the most underutilized facility in the district. Once life skills students, those generally with disabilities that require extensive communication and or physical and mobility supports in order to meaningfully participate in an academic setting, are moved to campuses that will be more conducive to their needs, there will be 271 students needing to be moved. Of those students, 56 call Bunch their home campus. The other home campuses impacted the most by Washington STEM shutdown would be Milam, Idea Travis, De Zavala, and Sam Houston Collegiate Prep. Bunch Elementary, in particular, might not be set up for the addition of that many more students. MISD statistics presented Wednesday showed that the campus currently shows an enrollment that is 113% of its functional capacity. The school also currently leads the district's elementary schools with 8 portable classrooms. Idea Travis has the highest enrollment of any elementary school, shows an enrollment that is 108% of its functional capacity, and uses 3 portables. De Zavala is shown to have a 95% capacity issue and uses 3 portables. There was concern on the board that the impact to campuses across that part of the district might require more extensive boundary changes than MISD had anticipated. Community members voiced concerns over YWLA move by Stuart Doreen. The idea of moving Young Women's Leadership Academy across town to the location where Washington STEM Academy resides was met with opposition Wednesday night at the Midland ISD board meeting. Moving the all-girls school from Southwest Midland to Southeast Midland was one of the 2 options presented to the school board. The other is leaving YWLA where it is and spending more than $3 million for additional customized portable buildings and related infrastructure. At Wednesday's meeting inside YWLA, it was announced another meeting will take place at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at Washington STEM. A decision on YWLA's short-term future could be made as early as the regularly scheduled December 14th board meeting. On Wednesday, there was support for finding YWLA a permanent home, including from students who touted that the school means to them and the opportunities that having their own building would provide. However, much of the 3+ hours was spent listening to community members that were upset with the school district decisions that led to MISD basically forcing the closure of a campus to give YWLA a permanent home. Steve Robertson, a father of Washington STEM students, was critical that it appeared the board was picking winners and losers with this decision. He said members of the school board should be focused on doing what is best for education for all the students, not just those that the district is committed to by contract. His comments were a reminder that the school district's contract with Young Women's Preparatory Network, the operator of YWLA, in 2019, states that MISD shall provide facilities in the form of classrooms, office furniture, equipment, and storage areas for the schools at no cost. He reminded the board that students across the district have already been challenged by the pandemic, and now is not the time for more hardships and setbacks. Take all students into consideration, not just the women of YWLA. Others in opposition also said it was another example of the district making changes to a school in South and East Midland that impacted neighborhoods, especially those that have traditionally been home to African-American residents. They included leaders in Midland's African-American community like Shirley Howard of the Negro Business and Professional Women's Club and James Fuller, who ended the evening by assigning the board to bring concrete suggestions for addressing systemic issues impacting African-American and other minorities in Midland. "We've been dancing around the real problem," said Fuller, who represented District 1 on the school board for decades, "the systemic racism that exists in Midland ISD. There were many residents, including former school board candidate Matt Galindo, who expressed frustration that MISD continues to make changes to schools in South and East Midland. Should YWLA be moved to the Washington STEM site, it would follow the turning over of Travis Elementary to IDEA Public Schools as an in-district charter and the closure of Crockett Elementary, which at the time had one of the longest failing streaks in the state and faced Texas Education Agency takeover. The former Crockett was turned into Franks Elementary, which is the home of students coming from the 349 corridor area in Northeast Midland until a new elementary school is built in that area. Residents have also stated concerns in their past that schools in their neighborhoods like Carver Center, Washington STEM, and Pease Elementary were turned into choice schools, creating less neighborhood school options for families in South and East Midland. Numbers provided by the district showed that the four home campuses impacted by a Washington STEM shutdown the most would be in the South and East region: Bunch, Milam, Idea Travis, and De Zavala. Other people were critical of the district efforts to recruit students to choice schools like YWLA and Washington STEM. When it came to YWLA, there was evidence that the campus isn't living up to the Young Women's Professional Network's own equity statement, which includes most of our students are people of color who come from low-income households, where often they are the first in their families to graduate high school and attend college. District statistics showed that white students make up the highest percentage of YWLA students, followed by Hispanic. District demographics show that the Hispanics make up 65% of the district's student population. White students make up 22%. The percentage of economically disadvantaged students at YWLA is 26%. That compared to 50% across the district and 55% at Washington STEM. The African-American population at YWLA is 6%, which is lower than the 7% across the district and 10% at Washington STEM. The percentage of English language learners also trails percentages at Washington STEM and across the district. YWLA campus leaders like Principal Laura Doty blame the COVID pandemic and the school's inability to recruit face-to-face for the disparity. Midland ISD officials did state that if YWLA is moved to the Washington STEM site, it would be called Young Women's Leadership Academy at Booker T. Washington. Texas Ranger remains on the stand. Defense questions exclusion of words in investigator's report. Thursday, the issues of fear, defending one's home, and how quickly or not interior camera images could be viewed were key points in the trial of David Wilson, the Midland man charged with killing a Midland police officer. Defense attorney Frank Sellers drilled down on Texas Ranger Cody Allen's training and his interview tactics, so much so that the district attorney's office produced an expert witness, Mike Bryant, who wrote the curriculum for investigative interview techniques and approved Allen's approach. On his third day of the witness stand, the ranger was repeatedly cross-examined about the thoroughness of his investigation and the resulting 171-page report. Notably, the words self-defense, Castle Doctrine, and presumption of reasonableness were never mentioned in it, according to Sellers. Extensive evaluation of the Wilson's home's security cameras led to information unknown to Allen. That is, some screens are just televisions that may be lag time to pull up cameras on the monitors, and Wilson may not have been experienced working with the appropriate app. Daily technical glitches on both sides of the bar continued to impede smooth progress of the trial, including during questioning by District Attorney Laura Nodoff of Officer Bailey Mims, the other probationary police officer involved. Eventually, the jury was able to see everything Mims saw once she and her field training officer, Alexander Duell, pulled up the scene. The defense pointed out that on her camera, one could barely hear Officer Nathan Heidelberg announce, MPD, come to the sound of my voice. However, Duell said he heard the announcement loud and clear that night. 47 seconds after their arrival, as they jogged to Heidelberg's position, the shot rang out. Another officer's body and car cameras recorded the scene that unfolded. Wilson could clearly be heard as he exited his home. It was Mims who handcuffed him, later bagged his hands, and placed him in a patrol car. Prosecutor Andrew Van Der Hoven questioned Duell and Officer Joel Cavarubio about the events after the shooting as they attempted to render first aid to Heidelberg, loaded him in a patrol car for the race to Midland Memorial Hospital, and secured the crime scene. Mims acknowledged that on March 13, 2019, the policies for answering alarm calls were changed at Midland Police Department. As of that date, she told the jury, the dispatcher has to speak with a verified key holder who is either at the property or en route before police are sent to the alarm calls, a change to prevent similar danger to officers. Code Ninjas offers community to kids who have love for logic. Business features courses, camps with game-based curriculum by J.C. Lewis. Code Ninjas will open in March at 3211 West Wadley, Suite 13. This is the area's first location, with the next closest Code Ninjas being in Lubbock. Code Ninjas teaches kids how to code through an engaging game-based curriculum that boosts self-confidence and teaches teamwork, logic, and problem-solving skills. Midland owner Jacqueline Guana said it just made sense to open a Code Ninjas in Midland. There wasn't anything like this in Midland that offered this type of extracurricular activity. If a kid is athletically inclined, they can enroll in a soccer or basketball league, and if my child is musically inclined, I could put them in piano lessons or get them a vocal coach. But if a child likes to build or put puzzles together, there's nothing for them until junior high. Then it depends on if their school has a robotics course. She added that children who would thrive at Code Ninjas don't have engagement options or a community to be a part of. She said kids can also cross over from other areas like sports, music, or arts and still enjoy coding. I'm excited to build a community of children who think this way, she said. She first came across Code Ninjas while searching for coding options for her children, 11 and 9. She saw an advertisement for the business, then thought, why not bring it to Midland? She has a background in education and fundraising. The courses are monthly, and children would come twice a week for an hour session. Children 5 to 14 years old can enroll. Then, kids are divided into two programs, either junior or create levels. Parents can also enroll their children in special camps. Summer camps, which focus on Minecraft and Roblox, will be offered during June and July. She also plans to have camps during fall and spring breaks. The courses can accommodate 36 children at a time. One of the best parts about how Code Ninjas will work is that through an app, parents can change what times their kids take courses. It's completely adjustable because we will be open various days, and the parent has complete control to fit it or adapt it to the family schedule. I personally appreciate that as a mother trying to get my kids where they need to go. Code Ninjas get their name from structuring courses like martial arts. Like martial arts, where the ninjas come from, the kids will have a belt system, a wristband. Kids will enter as a white wristband, and once they gain a level of mastery, they will graduate to a yellow band, all the way up to a black band. Kids will learn how to build their own game, then register the game once they get up to the black wristband. At the lower levels, they learn to manipulate and create parts of a game. The juniors program is $175 for a month, then the create program is $225 for a month. My vision is to build a community and have the children come to the classes and engage with other children while learning from instructors. It is fun, but it isn't necessarily easy because they are learning skills. During the pre-registration for a short time, parents can get an entire week-long summer camp for free. The camps will be Minecraft and Roblox, which she said are the most popular camps. Parents can register at codeninjas.com, Texas Midland. Look for more updates on the Code Ninjas Midland Facebook. Report. Woman told fiancé she put baby in the trunk. A woman charged with capital murder in the death of her newborn infant admitted to placing the infant in the trunk of her vehicle. Megan Crawley, 31, was arrested Tuesday at Midland Memorial Hospital by Midland Police. She was at MMH for a dilation and curettage procedure when doctors contacted police that she did not have any recollection of giving birth. Doctors estimated she had given birth about 4 days prior, according to the affidavit, as they removed a placenta the size of at least a 36-week gestational period. After coming out of anesthesia, she stated, she said she nor her husband even wanted kids, according to doctors. Detectives interviewed Collie about her pregnancy and the delivery of her baby, but she denied having a baby. Collie's fiancé also told detectives he didn't know she was pregnant, nor that she had given birth. Officers received consent to search the home, where the fiancé said there was a lot of blood in the bathroom and bedroom, according to the affidavit. The fiancé stated there was no blood when he showered in the morning, but when he returned home after Collie went into surgery, he found the blood in the house. While en route to the house, the fiancé received a text message from Collie stating, I love you. I messed up. Trunk of the Impala. They won't have to check the house. It was already dead. I'm going to jail for life. After obtaining a search warrant and her statement, Collie admitted to having the infant on Friday. She also said she placed the infant in several black plastic bags and placed him in the trunk of her car. Collie denied that the infant was alive when he was born. Paramedics on the scene stated the infant was breathing prior to being placed inside the plastic bags. She is currently at MMH under the arrest of Midland police. Jesse Kemp passed away on November 29th. Graveside services will be held Friday, December 3rd at Fairview Cemetery. Online condolences can be made at SanchezTFH.com. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Kemp family. Nathan Paul Hale passed away on November 19th. A celebration of life will be held at Valley View Baptist Church at 1 p.m. on Saturday, December 4th. Lunch for family and friends from 11:30 to 12:45 will be held at the church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven. Shirley Ray Harrison Ireland passed away on November 30th. Visitation will be at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, December 3rd. The First United Methodist Church will hold a memorial service at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 4th. A graveside burial will be at Rest Haven Cemetery, 9 a.m. Monday, December 6th. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Sylvester Wilson Sr. passed away on November 29th. A memorial service will be held Saturday, December 4th at 11 a.m. at St. Paul Baptist Church in Hearn. LaSalle Skurlock passed away November 29th. Graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, December 6th at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Linda Inez Edwards passed away on November 29th. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Melissa Ann Henderson of Midland passed away November 24th. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 8th at Goodwill Baptist Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Monty Clay Smith passed away on November 24th in Odessa. Funeral services will be held Friday, December the 3rd at 2 p.m. at Central Baptist Church in Odessa. Burial will follow immediately at American Heritage Funeral Cemetery. Rogelio Gutierrez Estrada passed away on November 30th. Viewing will be Saturday, December 4th from 10 to 9 p.m. and Sunday, December 5th from 1 to 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Monday, December 6th at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, December 3rd, 2021. Landgraf formally files for re-election. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, filed papers Thursday with the Republican Party of Texas to run for re-election to the Texas House of Representatives. Quote, "I love West Texas and remain unwaveringly committed to our time-honored principles of liberty, self-reliance, and integrity," end quote, Landgraf said. Quote, "I'm in the best position to do the most good for West Texas and fight for our conservative values in the Texas House of Representatives. Together, we've made the voice of West Texas as strong as it has ever been in the Texas Capitol, and we're not done yet," end quote. Landgraf said his leadership this year helped the Texas legislature pass pro-Second Amendment constitutional carry legislation, a pro-life heartbeat bill, and dedicated nearly $3 billion to secure the border where the Biden administration has failed, among other conservative legislative victories. Landgraf also serves as the chair of the House Environmental Regulation Committee, which is an important committee for the Permian Basin's energy district, energy industry, and West Texans. As chairman, Landgraf killed radical environmental policy proposals in 2021. Bills seeking to outlaw flaring, attempting to create climate change councils, or calling for the passage of the Green New Deal, which Landgraf said did not see the light of day in the committee under his watch. Landgraf said he has fought hard to ensure state resources are prioritized for the Permian Basin. He said the fruit of his labor is becoming more and more evident, exemplified by the record-breaking transportation funding that has been secured for the Permian Basin the last 3 years in a row. The state's most recent budget discussions resulted in several other major wins for West Texas, including additional funding for rural school districts, hundreds of millions of dollars for rural broadband infrastructure, funding for higher education construction projects in Odessa, and $40 million to build a Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center set to be complete by 2024. Quote, "It is with a humble heart, full of gratitude, that I once again ask for your vote. I'm honored to serve the community where I was raised, where I met my wife, and where we have chosen to raise our daughter. That's why I will never stop fighting for the Permian Basin. This is my home. With your vote and prayerful support, I'll continue to be the voice West Texans deserve to have in the Texas House of Representatives," end quote, Landgraf said. Ban march to support Andrews. Christmas parade route doubles in length. After the Andrews High School band was involved in a fiery November 19th crash that left its band director, Darren Johns, and longtime retired teacher Mark Boswell dead, the Andrews Chamber of Commerce didn't bother them to play in the annual Christmas parade. Nohemi Sanchez, the executive director of the Andrews Chamber of Commerce, said she felt it wasn't proper to ask the AHS band to play after its traumatic experience, and she didn't want to put any more stress on what they were going through. However, Sanchez said an official from the AHS band reached out to her on November 23rd and told her that more than 20 schools had offered to send students to play in the annual Andrews Christmas parade. As of Thursday afternoon, that number had climbed to 22 to 28 bands. Jimmy Olog, assistant director of the Odessa High School Marching Band, said that he has heard upward of 40 bands. Quote, "It's very emotional and it's very heartwarming for the community to know that we have such support from all surrounding areas, not just in the Permian Basin, but the whole state of Texas and throughout the United States," end quote, Sanchez said. Quote, "We have received such support from everybody reaching out to either volunteer or monetary donations or making sure that everyone is being taken care of, especially those band students that were affected. Quote, we can't show our gratitude enough," end quote. To accommodate the high influx of bands, Sanchez said she had to speak with city officials about the parking for the charter buses. Sanchez said the parade route also had to be altered. It was stretched to more than a mile long, which doubles the original parade route. That parade route increased again on Thursday by adding another three city blocks. Quote, "When all these bands started reaching out, that's when it became real to us that our parade wasn't sufficient enough to host that many students and that big of a crowd," end quote, Sanchez said. Quote, "I had to reach out to all my community leaders and ask for help. It took a whole army to plan this, but I'm so proud to live in Andrews, where we are a very tight community and we show our support wherever it is needed," end quote. One of the bands that will be in attendance is the Odessa High School Marching Band. Olog said when he initially asked on Tuesday if anyone wanted to go, about 20 students raised their hands. Olog found out Wednesday afternoon that a bus to take them to Andrews would be available. On Thursday morning, Olog told the students that a bus would be available, and he said that number doubled to about 40 students. Quote, "As soon as we told the kids, they were really quick to step up and volunteer, which was fantastic," end quote, Olog said on Thursday morning. Quote, "I wasn't expecting them to do that. The other great thing is how quickly ECISD were able to get us a bus to take to Andrews," end quote. The students will leave OHS at around 4:30 p.m. today and arrive around 5 p.m. in Andrews. Olog said the students are excited as they will learn and practice the piece of music that they will play during the parade with everyone else about an hour before the start of the parade. Quote, "They are going to rehearse with everybody," end quote, Olog said. Quote, "We are going to learn the song that we are going to perform right there at the parade site an hour before. They are excited about the challenge and they are eager to see how it's going to work out," end quote. Sanchez said it has been humbling to see the outpouring support for the AHS band and the Andrews community as a whole. Quote, "I don't even know how to express myself on how lucky we are," end quote, Sanchez said. McKinney Park dazzles again with light show. Christmas comes to town. On Thursday night, the biggest light show between Dallas and El Paso was lit up for this holiday season. Odessa's famously extravagant Starbright Village Christmas light show was open to the public at McKinney Park at 625 North Poole Road. The opening ceremony included performances by local choirs, dance groups, and an appearance by Santa Claus. The village was first created in McKinney Park in the early 1990s. This year's opening was a return to normal after last year's event was a little downsized due to COVID-19. For City Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton, this year's opening night festivities were a welcomed return to normal. Quote, "The biggest difference between this year and last year is that this feels real," end quote, Patton said. Quote, "Last year was a whole different story because of COVID. This year we decided, because it was safe enough and the numbers were good enough for us to host this event on site, rather than how we did it last year. Everything is about the same as it has been in the past," end quote. A big crowd was out on hand at the park to celebrate the start of the Christmas season in the Permian Basin. The weather wasn't a disruption as temperatures were in the low 70s at around 6:30 with clear skies. Quote, "People have been asking about this event and the weather couldn't have been any more beautiful," end quote, Patton said. Quote, "It's absolutely gorgeous tonight. Everyone is excited to get out and do something," end quote. Thursday's display was only a walkthrough, but beginning today, people will be able to drive through at the park. Located just off I-20, the light display will run every evening from 7 to 11 p.m. through January 2nd. Every year, people from all over the state make their way over to see Starbright Village. It also attracts a big number of Odessans. For Odessan Lynette Jimenez, who is a mother of two, Samara, 10, and Prometheus, 11, bringing her family to Starbright Village every year is a tradition. Quote, "We've been coming since my son was born," end quote, Lynette said. Quote, "He was born on December 9th of 2009, and the following year we started coming here and have been ever since," end quote. Part of the reason Lynette and her family enjoys coming to Starbright Village is a sense of community pride. Quote, "We feel like we're all together as a town to bringing in the holiday spirit," end quote, Lynette said. Quote, "The free hot chocolate doesn't hurt either," end quote. Thursday's event saw the Chuckwagon Gang and free hot chocolate with food trucks offering meals. Patton says the preparation for the event takes well over a month. Quote, "The excitement and the preparation are everything," end quote, Patton said. Quote, "We've been working on this for over 6 weeks from sunup to sundown. It's just a tradition and community event. We have a passion for this event. We love to do this for the entire Permian Basin to enjoy, and people like to make this a part of their holiday festivities. My passion is providing something that families will enjoy and something that Odessa and all of the Permian Basin will enjoy. There is no better reward than to see the smiles on everyone's faces," end quote. Mayor Javier Joven and his grandkids lit the village. Quote, "This is one of the things that I've been looking forward to as mayor. I've wanted to do the Christmas lighting, and my grandkids got to do it tonight," end quote, Joven said. Quote, "I get to show off my family, which is something that I don't get a chance to do. We've enjoyed Starbright Village, and we're excited," end quote. This year's display will include over 300,000 lights and feature 80-plus lighted displays as Christmas music plays. Last year's display saw a record 268,000 visitors. Quote, "Everyone is excited," end quote, Joven said. Quote, "They're ready for Christmas. The city is ready to get into the mood. I want everyone to enjoy this, and I want to give kudos to our Parks Department and everyone. The amount of work that it takes for everyone to make this work is huge. Also, I want to give kudos to the Police Department and city staff and manager to make sure these events run without a hitch and make sure that everyone's secure," end quote. Admission is free to the event. Gingerbread event to benefit food bank. With the Christmas season now in full swing, Spirit and Truth Church in Odessa has created a unique way for families to have fun and benefit the West Texas Food Bank. This Saturday, Spirit and Truth Church will have its first ever gingerbread extravaganza, which will benefit the West Texas Food Bank. For $35 per gingerbread house, families can decorate with all sorts of different candies, snack on cookies with coffee or hot chocolate, and take pictures in the picture booth and enjoy Christmas music. Half of the registration fee will go to the West Texas Food Bank. Quote, "It's something that we wanted to do to support the food bank, but it's also Christmas season," end quote, Spirit said. Truth Pastor Russell Nevitt said, quote, "It offers families something fun to do. Decorating gingerbread houses is something that a lot of kids like to do. Parents can do it with their kids, grandparents can do it with their grandkids, and etc. They come to the food bank, sit down with their houses, and all their decorating materials are there. They decorate their houses. There'll be Christmas music playing," end quote. The event will take place from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at the West Texas Food Bank. Quote, "They take their gingerbread houses home with them," end quote, Nabit said. Quote, "All the proceeds and any profit from this event go to the food bank. Most people don't understand that $1 will feed 5 people at the food bank. If we can actually sell 50 houses purchased, it'll give food to a lot of people," end quote. Russell and his wife Stephanie recently moved back to Odessa after spending time in El Paso. This isn't the first time they've done an event like this. Quote, "Stephanie is creative and has done this before in the past with different places," end quote, Russell said. Quote, "It's always a fun event for families, and we're big on doing family-oriented events so that mom, dad, and kids and grandparents can spend quality time together. They're not just in front of a TV. They're doing something fun together. We're new back in town. We were in Odessa for 5 years. We went to El Paso and then came back to Odessa to start a new church, and we wanted to do something fun for our first Christmas back that families can take part in," end quote. Stephanie talked about how the idea of doing this event came about. Quote, "We did something similar when we were at a church in El Paso. We actually raised money for the Child Advocacy Center there," end quote, Stephanie said. Quote, "We moved here and it was a successful event, and we realized how fun it was for families to get together and do something for the community while having fun themselves. We saw the need here and saw that $1 can feed 5 people through the food bank, and we wanted to promote the food bank and do something fun for Christmas for families," end quote. Those who are interested in taking part will need to go online to register at spiritandtruthodessa.org. Quote, "They do need to register because we want to make sure that there are gingerbread houses for everybody," end quote, Russell said. Quote, "There's limited space, so we can do 50 families, basically. They can go to our church webpage, and there's link to register, and that's spiritandtruthodessa.org. Or they can go to eventbrite.com, and the link to that page takes you to that page, and it's a registration thing for community events, and you just have to find the Spirit and Truth Gingerbread House Extravaganza. The registration is $35. Half of that amount goes to the food bank," end quote. Russell and his wife have been involved with distributing food with different churches, and this is something they wanted to do to help the West Texas Food Bank. Quote, "I have seen families come, especially in the midst of COVID, after being laid off, coming to get groceries," end quote, Russell said. Quote, "There's nothing like seeing the expression on somebody's face, especially a mom when she knows she'll have groceries for her kids. When you can give someone enough money for food for a week, there is an expression in their smile that you're not going to get anywhere else. We may not be able to pay their car bills, but there's no reason why anyone shouldn't be able to feed their kids," end quote. Life Center breaks ground on addition. The Life Center, 802 North Washington Street in Odessa, held a groundbreaking Thursday for a 5,000-square-foot addition to its current quarters. The estimated $2 million project is expected to be complete in September. The buildings will not be physically connected. The current two-story building is about 4,000 square feet, but Executive Director Judy Rouse said they can only use about 1,500 square feet. The building will be repurposed as a Young Moms Mentor program, Rouse said. Quote, "We are an alternative to abortion education support organization. We're faith-based, nonprofit," end quote, Rouse said. She added that they started in 1979 as a phone bank. The Odessa office opened in 2013. Andrews was the first satellite, followed by Odessa and then Big Spring. Quote, "This one we're purposing to also offer the same services in Midland, which is STI, STD testing, and treatment, free. There's cost that you're over 25, end quote, Rouse said. The estimated project cost is about $2 million. The project is supported by donations. The architect is JSA Architects. Cooper Construction is building the facility, and several engineering firms are involved in the project. Rouse said the Life Center serves about 9,000 people at all of its locations, and before COVID saw 18,000 to 25,000 students. Fill the stocking. Quick hits. The Empty Stocking Fund needs your help to reach this year's goal of $100,000 with only 14 days left to meet it. A generous matching challenge from the Sewell family of companies has been offered to match donations up to $50,000. Funds stay in Ector County and help needy families who are struggling financially. The Empty Stocking Fund, an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army, raised funds for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes are both for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. Donate online at https://give.salvationarmytexas.org/give/37187/#donation/checkout. COVID by the numbers. Ector County, 26,557 total cases, 554 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 3 students, 1 staff. Midland County, 29,519 total cases, 385 deaths. Texas, 4,341,140 total cases, 73,928 deaths. U.S. cases, 48,628,787 total confirmed, and 781,963 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Vaccine clinic set. Ector County ISD and the Ector County Health Department will team up for a third Pfizer pediatric vaccine clinic from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. today, Friday, at Zavala Elementary School. Blue Santa is scheduled to appear and be available to take pictures with families. A donation of an unwrapped toy for Operation Blue Santa will put you in a drawing for a prize. From staff reports. Empty stocking. Anonymous. $92.98. Today's total, $92.98. Previous total, $9,975. Grand total, $10,417.98. Goal, $100,000. Want to help? Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800, Odessa, or the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, 79761. Donate online at https://give.salvationarmytexas.org/give/37187/#donation/checkout. Want to know more? Call 332-0738. What is it? The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. Empty stocking funds enable the Salvation Army to provide toys and food baskets to needy families in Odessa. This year's goal is $100,000. What's going on? Gifted and Talented Windows Open. The Gifted Talented program, called Scholars in Progress, is one of the choices students and parents can consider. Ector County ISD is accepting nominations for second graders through fifth graders through December 10th, middle school 6th through 8th through December 10th, high school 9 through 11 through December 10th. Anyone can nominate a student from ECISD for testing. On the net, tinyurl.com/2P9BEV2B. Jingle Bell Rock. Beaton Bow Homes has scheduled a Jingle Bell Rock, a live in-person Christmas celebration from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at the Odessa New Home Center, 1201 87th Street, and at the Midland New Home Center, 6718 Texas 349, Midland. For every photo taken with Santa and Mrs. Claus, Beaton Bow Homes will donate $1 to a local nonprofit. There also will be complimentary hot cocoa bar, sweet treats, popcorn, and crafts. Donations from photos will be made to Next Level Heroes in Odessa and Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Permian Basin in Midland. This event is free and open to the community. For more information, visit beatonbow.com/Christmas. Holidays Women's Christmas. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 9000 Andrews Highway, has scheduled the annual Holidays Women's Christmas event for women ages 12 and older at 7 p.m. today. Doors open at 5 p.m. for shopping from a variety of local boutiques and vendors. The event will also include a power service complete with praise and worship from OCFC Music Ministry. an inspirational teaching from Kathy DePlantis, and more. For more information, call 432-368-7714 or www.ocfc.org. Hospital CIO Proud of Award. Medical Center Hospital Chief Information Officer Linda Carpenter and her team cover just about everything the hospital system uses every day. Her 44-person department covers anything from computers to systems, images, and even the telephone systems for the hospital and its clinics. Recently, the College of Healthcare Information Management Executives announced that Medical Center Hospital has earned 2021 CHIME Digital Health Most Wired recognition as a certified acute level 8 and ambulatory level 7. The CHIME Digital Health Most Wired program conducts an annual survey to assess how effectively healthcare organizations apply core and advanced technologies into their clinical and business programs to improve health and care in their communities. Quote, we go through a process of we have to apply, we have to answer a questionnaire of 160 questions about our use of those technologies. But really, based on the use of the technologies that are in place, you're recognized as a most wired hospital, which means basically that you've implemented and have adoption of those technologies, and the results are intended to improve patient safety and outcomes to drive change in healthcare, end quote, Carpenter said. Pretty much anything anyone does during the day, whether it's looking up patient records or making a phone call, that is Carpenter's team. Quote, we support those computers and the system that provides that information, end quote, she said. The hospital also has electronic medical records. Quote, our patient records are in our EMR, but our EMR now has connectivity with other EMRs through interoperability. That's a nationwide effort to be able to share information from one hospital to another. Quote, for instance, if I'm a patient and I go to Dallas and Dallas participates in interoperability, then I don't have to take copies of my records to Dallas. When they log in, they'll see Linda's been at Medical Center Hospital and has agreed to share her records. So I can see those now in my system instead of having to request those and delay healthcare, end quote, Carpenter said. Things change pretty much daily in Carpenter's world, and she's seen the evolution having been with the hospital for going on 31 years. Quote, I remember a room full of paper patient records and those processes before we had an electronic health record, and people recording their dictation on cassette tapes and playing those back. There have been quite a bit of change. It's been really exciting, end quote, she said. On the award, Carpenter said she was very happy to receive the recognition. Quote, our team has worked really hard to get everything in place, but it also says a lot about our providers and our clinicians using that technology, end quote, she said. You can provide the technology all day long, but really it's the use of that technology, the adoption of it from our clinicians that really make the difference in the patient's outcomes, end quote. Carpenter said there are some people who are happy to adopt and others who want to do things the way they've always been done. Ultimately, people come around. Quote, overall, our adoption rate's been very high. I'm just really proud of it. We'll continue to strive for next level next year as we implement additional technologies and get the adoption of those technologies in place and expand our telehealth and our digital front door. We'll continue to strive for higher, end quote, Carpenter said. A digital front door is when you have an app on your phone, like an MCH app, and when you open it, you can see parts of your record, she said. Quote, you can pay a bill, you can ask for an appointment, you can refill medication, you could look up providers all in one application, end quote, Carpenter said. She added that end users are surveyed and they get a lot of good feedback. The satisfaction level is pretty high. Of course, there are times when someone's computer doesn't work or their overflow has changed, and we need to help modify our systems to accommodate those workflows, and we work through that with them. So I think we've got a very high satisfaction and a great relationship with our users, end quote. When they have to make changes, they are done in a test environment, quote, and we'll have those subject matter experts do the testing with us to validate, yes, this is what we want, yes, this works, and then we'll work with them to ensure that end users are notified and have training before we put those changes into production, end quote. Quote, we don't want to surprise anybody, end quote, Carpenter added. Medical Center President and CEO Russell Tippin said the IT team are some of the biggest unsung heroes of the past 2 years. Quote, their dedication and ability to adapt and improve our information technology systems throughout this pandemic has been nothing short of remarkable. In the ever-changing landscape of healthcare, it is vital to have an IT team as dedicated as the one at MCH, end quote, Tippin said in a news release. Is a different booster vaccine okay? Dear Dr. Roach, I'm 71 and have had both Moderna COVID-19 vaccination shots. When I called my doctor to inquire about a Moderna booster, I was told one was not available now, but that I could take the Pfizer booster. Can you confirm this? I'm a little wary of taking another type of booster shot. Answer. The immunity to COVID-19 from the Moderna mRNA vaccines seems to be a bit longer lasting than that for the Pfizer vaccine. And as of this writing, a third dose of either Moderna or Pfizer vaccine is recommended only for people over 65 or who are otherwise at high risk or with frequent institutional or occupational exposure. Some research has been done on changing the type of vaccine for an individual, and the results are promising that there might be additional benefit to changing. However, the Food and Drug Administration recently advised that any approved COVID-19 vaccine, Pfizer, Moderna, or Janssen, may be used. All three provide high protection with low risk. I am putting some of the newest recommendations on my Facebook page for those who want more detail. Facebook.com/Dr. Keith Roach. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Love interest raises eyebrow at man's shifts in behavior. Dear Abby, a few months ago I started dating a widower. He is really a great guy and he seems perfect for me. I'm divorced and my adult children live in other states. We have many shared interests and have a lot of fun together. I noticed early on that he is very emotional, but occasionally he seems to have manic episodes where he works himself nearly to death, doesn't eat or sleep much, and then abruptly leaves. When we talk afterward, he picks on me for really trivial or untrue things. I know bipolar disorder isn't simple to diagnose, and I don't think this issue has ever come up with him. I just wonder if this relationship has a chance. His first marriage ended in divorce, and his children want nothing to do with him. Evidently, his second marriage was good, but she died last year. His youngest son is in college. My self-esteem isn't tied to this. I enjoy his company 95% of the time, and I think I love him. I don't plan to ever remarry, and neither does he. I don't think he's dangerous, but I am a no-drama type, so I'm wondering if I should let him go, even though it would be hard to do. Signed, Seeing Signs in Michigan. Dear Seeing Signs, if what you have written is accurate, you have seen this man only during his highs, but not during his lows. Because bipolar illness can be treated, if the person is willing to admit they may have a problem, it would be wise to discuss this with him when he is in a normal phase and suggest that he be screened. If he refuses, then might be the time to rationally, rather than emotionally, decide whether to let him go. Dear Abby, I have two beautiful daughters from previous marriage. My ex and I get along well, better as friends than partners, and do things as often as possible with the girls, which includes travel. We usually take one or two trips a year. The girls love it, and so do we. I am now remarried. My wife has a hard time with the traveling, and we have had many fights about it. She would like both families to travel together, but my girls don't want that. My ex's mom has just booked a trip to Hawaii and is willing to pay for me to go. My wife said absolutely not because Hawaii is such a paradise. I'm torn because these trips are the only real quality time I have with the girls. There's absolutely nothing going on between my ex and me. The girls would rather travel with their mom than anyone else. What should I do? Signed, Packed and Ready. Dear Pat, how long have you been remarried, and how old are your girls? Although they may enjoy the fantasy of their parents being a happy family, that is all it is, a fantasy. It's wonderful that you and your ex-wife enjoy an amicable relationship, but the time has come for you to stand up for the woman to whom you are presently married. She should have been welcomed on those trips right after the two of you made it official, and you should have made that clear. I don't blame your wife for being upset at this point. I would be too. You should encourage your wife to come too and devote some time to being with her.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.